This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 2nd of September 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 1st of September 2016, which this week has been edited by Sue Frain, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: residents facing waste centre fees, city transport to be reviewed, and biblical punishment. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Residents facing waste centre fees. Charges will be introduced for residents to dump waste at recycling centres in Hampshire. The County Council will bring in charges for soil, rubble, plasterboard and asbestos on October the 1st. It comes after 20 recycling centres across the county were saved from closure earlier this year after a public outcry. However, the centres will now close on Thursday and open at 11 a.m. every day as part of a £1.55 million saving. Residents wanting to dump soil and rubble at centres will be charged £2.50 per part or item, or for a whole 30-litre bag. There will also be £10 for sheets of plasterboard, or £6 for a 30-litre bag, while cement-bonded asbestos will be charged at £11 per sheet. Cash and card payment options will be available at each centre. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Environment and Transport, Councillor Rob Humby, said, "Managing Hampshire's waste costs all the councils in the county around £100 million each year, and coupled with ongoing reductions in government funding, we needed to look carefully at how we deal with and pay for waste. This type of DIY and construction waste is particularly expensive to dispose of, costing Hampshire's Hampshire's council taxpayers around £1 million each year. This new charge is being introduced from October the 1st to cover the additional costs of disposing DIY and construction waste compared to household waste, which we believe is the fairest way for as many as possible, and which residents told us they support. Many authorities elsewhere in the UK already charge for this type of waste to cover their cost of its disposal. If you are due to start a large renovation project, I would suggest looking at the cost of hiring a skip versus multiple trips to your local HWRC, with items that you will be charged for. However, I would stress that these charges apply to the specified waste types only, and no householder will be expected to pay for normal household waste, green garden waste, or recyclable materials. There will be no charge for crockery or clay and terracotta flower pots."
City transport to be reviewed. Winchester is set to have a new transport strategy that council chiefs say will look at improving air quality and also boost cycling. The new lead transport strategy for Winchester will be created by Hampshire County Council. It will set a new direction for transport in and around the city, including improving pedestrian and cycle links between key areas, easing congestion, reducing traffic levels, improving air quality and enhancing public transport links. The new strategy will consider new housing developments, such as Barton Farm, and it is hoped that links between the new developments and Winchester City Centre will be improved. The other main corridors to the city centre, such as Southgate Street, St Cross Road, Cheshill Street, Andover Road, Stockbridge Road and Rumsey Road, will also be looked at. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Environment and Transport, Rob Humby, said, "With significant housing developments underway in the city and other potential developments in the pipeline, now is the right time to review the progress we have made and set a new direction for Winchester. As well as the city centre itself, we will be looking at improving links between new developments and the city centre and all of the main corridors leading into it. Our ambition is to create a transport system fit for an historic city and a thriving economic hub, which will be able to accommodate a future increase in use, but also make Winchester a healthier place to live, work and enjoy the local environment. Hampshire County Council will take the lead in this new study and will work in close partnership with Winchester City Council as the planning and parking authority. Businesses, residents, commuters and transport operators will also have a role to play in helping to shape the future vision for transport in Winchester. The study is expected to start in September and culminate in a public consultation next year."
Biblical punishment. Cathedral raider breaks both ankles after 25-foot plunge. He stole £10 from the donation box, caused damage estimated at tens of thousands of pounds to one of Hampshire's historic treasures, and crawled away with two broken ankles. Paul Wilde had admitted burglary and criminal damage at Winchester Cathedral, estimated at £37,867 to the mortuary chests that hold the bones of Saxon kings, and a stained glass window through which he battered an escape route. Wilde, 34, a heroin addict, suffered five fractures in the 25-foot fall overnight on May the 9th to 10th, Winchester Crown Court heard. It heard Wilde was spotted by PC Ben Vaines crawling past the Wessex Hotel towards the taxi rank in the Broadway, but the officer assumed he was drunk. However, soon afterwards, PC Vaines was called to the crime scene in the cathedral and made the connection to the crawling man. PC Vaines then tracked Wilde down via the taxi firm to his room in a hostel in Hyde Street, where cathedral donation envelopes were found, and he was arrested. Wilde has been jailed for 20 months. Christopher Wing, prosecuting, said Wilde had a £100-a-day crack and heroin habit. He hid himself under the cathedral altar table and waited until the building closed. Then he emerged, smashed a collection box for the £10 cash inside. Mr. Wing said he then found himself unable to get out, so he climbed around the carvings and tombs and mortuary chests. These items are of significant historical importance. They are damaged, and it will cost a lot of money to repair them. In order to make his way out, Wilde kicked out panels of stained glass windows, which were last restored in the 19th century. He got out from the window and dropped 25 feet and got multiple fractures when he hit the ground. Mr. Wing said Wilde told police he sometimes went to the cathedral to pray and was also sometimes suicidal about his drug-ruined life, which has seen 31 convictions for 67 offences. Nicholas Cotter, mitigating, said Wilde had been blighted by drugs and the need to find money. Mr. Cotter said that the broken bones were perhaps a biblical punishment, and he was still in considerable pain 3 months on. He said the damage was not malicious but reckless, as in his drug-addled state, Wilde sought to flee the scene. Jailing Wilde, Judge Susan Evans QC said, "Winchester Cathedral is an important symbolic building. It is a unique building that many people work hard to preserve. It is a place of worship and important spiritually to many people. Damage causes real distress. It is valued and loved in this city. The cathedral is financially self-supporting. It has insurance, but the cost of the claim will mean a greater premium the next year. I accept your remorse and that you did not intend to cause the level of damage you did and that you continue to suffer from the effects of the fall. The cathedral was asked to comment but had not responded at the time of going to press. And this is a subsidiary item here marked the bones of King Canute inside. The mortuary chests are normally placed on the top of the screens but are currently stacked on the ground as part of a research project into the bones inside. The bones are believed to be members of the royal families of Wessex and England, from Cynegils, who died in 643, to William Rufus, slain in the New Forest in 1100. They include Canute, 1035, the Danish king who famously tried to hold back the waves on a Southampton beach to show his fawning courtiers that he was mortal. The remains were jumbled up in the English Civil War in the 1640s when Roundheads vandalised the church. Many of the stained glass windows were destroyed in that same rampage in the 1640s. They were reassembled higgledy-piggledy in an abstract blaze of colour.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Burns, Michael Joseph Burns, at home on the 26th of August, aged 83. Carter, Walter, known as Wally Carter, on the 17th of August, aged 85. Diplock, Cyril Norman Diplock, on the 21st of August, aged 83. Howes, Winifred Howes, at Moorside Nursing Home in Winchester, on the 3rd of August, aged 93. Keeling, Pam Keeling, on the 22nd of August, at Countess Mountbatten Hospice. Rowell, Albert William Charles, known as Bill Rowell, on the 27th of August, aged 93. Smith, Roger Michael Smith, at home on the 26th of August. And Underwood, Anne, known as Renee Underwood, on the 17th of August, at Devonish House, aged 100. We now move on to Christian Comment.
And this week, Christian Comment is written by Paul, the Reverend Paul Kennedy, the rector of the East Winchester Benefice, and he's entitled it, "The Truth Will Set Us Free." The church is for losers. We connect to each other and to God through our shared brokenness. Thus said the Lutheran pastor, Nadia Boltz-Weber. And as a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, she should know. Losers gathered together in their brokenness is both an obvious and a denied approach to church life. Obvious because the church is made real by a shared meal. The meal which Jesus gave us in remembrance of him, we celebrate with shared bread and wine. A meal, like other meals that Jesus celebrated, which would have been shared with smelly fishermen, corrupt and collaborating tax collectors and scandalous prostitutes, the broken losers of the day. A meal to which, like all our meals, Jesus tells us to invite the poor, the crippled, the lame and the blind. However, this founding truth of church life is also denied. So often in church we pretend that everything is good. Our faith is strong, our families are successful, and our job is fulfilling. A Christian culture of success, one that says we should get our relationships with God and neighbour sorted, too often denies our Christian theology. A theology which says that we are all fallen and we really know our need of God's grace. Jesus perceptively states, "The truth will set you free." And one of the most incredible privileges of Christian ministry is hearing people struggling to articulate the painful truths which scar their own lives, a ministry often called confession. This statement of truth about our own lives is the first stage in letting go of the pain and shame which is so ready to define who we are. It's not that we have a revengeful God looking for an opportunity to punish us for our sins. It's that we can so often deny, even to ourselves, the nature of our sins and failures. Denied shame is brooding in our subconscious, breaking out into our own self-image and undermining our relationships. To quote Nadia again, we aren't punished for our sins as much as we're punished by our sins. The Jewish Christian foundational myth is of hidden shame. Adam and Eve are seduced by the serpent, taste of the forbidden fruit, and then hide from God because they are ashamed. What instead of being ashamed, they had been truthful with God and articulated that truth? Sorry, we mucked up. What if our foundational myth was not one of shame, but of truth and forgiveness? Kate Nash sang, "My fingers tips are holding onto the cracks in our foundations." It's in our cracks that truth and relationships are recognized. The cracks in our ego let God in, while the cracks in our facade allow others to see us as we are. Confession leads to absolution, or forgiveness, and the shedding of the power of shame. It's a process, not a one-off event, often accompanied by these words, "Do you believe that the world of forgiveness I'm about to proclaim to you comes from God?" We experience the reality of God's good news when we acknowledge the reality of sin's bad news.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we start off with the first letter.
And this first letter is from Chris Higgins, and it's about not letting railways ride roughshod over public. Sir, much concern has been raised about the council's proposals for station approach, both in the flawed process and the inappropriate brief. But another large development in the area is about to slip under the radar without any planning controls at all. You published an image, Chronicle August the 11th, of a cheap and nasty crinkly tin deck proposed on the West Station car park, matching the ugly one recently installed on the east side. Train companies have the right to undertake essential works to keep the railways running without the need for planning consent. Wasn't this intended for emergencies, such as repairs after flooding at Dawlish or trees falling across the line? Surely non-urgent works, such as car parking, should be subject to normal public consultations and planning controls. A few years ago, Network Rail raised the height of the bridges to accommodate a larger generation of freight trains. I understand that Hampshire County Council tried in vain to persuade them to increase the width of the bridge on the Andover Road to create a better footpath and cycle route from Barton Farm into the city centre, offering to pay the additional costs, but Network adamantly refused. Network Rail's myopic selfishness will result in local residents suffering a lifetime of unnecessary congestion along the Andover Road with a bottleneck at the railway bridge. The proposed deck to the station car park is another example. With joined-up thinking, the City Council and South West Trains should have negotiated a joint venture to build a bigger and better car park with a decent architectural facade, which might then have alleviated the need for the excessive underground car park proposed in Station Approach. Public transport should be a public service, and it is an abuse of the railway's power to ride roughshod over the communities they serve. Surely it is time for the law to be changed so that the public interest is protected and this abuse by the railways is controlled. May I urge your readers to alert their MP to see what can be done to protect this fine city of Winchester? Chris Higgins, St James Villas, Winchester.
Kate McIntosh writes, lead by officers, or maybe led by officers, perhaps it is. Sir, in response to Simon Cook's Panglossian view on the administration of our affairs by the Winchester City Council, letters August the 25th, I must tell him that I do know better. After 40-plus years of professional practice, most of it served in local government offices, I know that there are more effective ways of planning for the future of towns and communities than those currently being inflicted on Winchester. He must know, from his 28 years of experience in the executive and legislative arms of local government, that elected members without specialist training and experience can be bamboozled and led by officers who, though themselves may be motivated by a wish to serve, are operating out with their own field of competence and consequently seek ways to camouflage their errors under the banner of TINA. That stands for There Is No Alternative. It is many years since Winchester City Council employed an appropriately qualified chief planning officer. There is always an alternative when the in-house expertise is insufficient to the task, which is to employ outside multidisciplinary experts with a record of successful outcomes in placemaking, to work from carefully written briefs composed in response to meaningful consultation. In the particular case of Winchester, it seems that the ruling group have narrowed their objective to that of an accountant seeking to balance the books short term and have forgotten their overriding responsibilities as guardians of a city of priceless treasure and history. We all want Winchester to succeed as a vibrant, lively place, but let us not sell our tomorrows for the sake of today. It's from Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Anne Jones writes on recycling centres. Sir, I would like to express my profound concern regarding the reduction of opening hours of Hampshire Recycling and Waste Management Centres. I believe the public should be given a detailed explanation as to the actual savings this will make. Although the County Council has stated fly tipping will be monitored, again the public should be informed how and to what expense. I doubt this will be viable in man hours or wasted costs. Winchester Recycling has had hours of opening reduced before, which has increased traffic queues, backtracking to the traffic lights at times, which put extra pressure on site staff. Now, the second round of reduction in hours not only puts pressure on the public, but the staff also. Speaking to some of them this week, they feel undervalued and demoralised. I also ask, with staff hours reduced again, how this will impact on their wages and on their well-being, which in itself is degrading. This decision will have a major impact on the public as well as employees, and again I ask, let us have the hard financial facts of the savings made. Anne Jones, Felmer Drive, Kingsworthy.
Rotten Council asks Mrs. Lucy Hodder. Sir, your story, Chronicle July the 19th, listing the latest problems to beset New Alsford Town Council, make one wonder. At which point are public servants moved to take responsibility for their actions? Reading the report on the council's website, requiring some delving to find, They don't have control over staff costs, money movements, purchasing or budgeting. They don't seek best value for residents either, so they say. So what are they doing to look after the public purse? Has the chairman, Mrs. Griffiths, resigned? Has the council's senior manager offered to go? Time that responsibility was taken. Another rotten council to add to the list. Mrs. Lucy Hodder, De Lucy Avenue, Alsford.
Keith Webb writes, dead city centre. Sir, with Beals, the flagship store in the Brooks Centre, finally closing its doors, does this not say something about the future of large retail stores in Winchester? With ever fewer car parking spaces available, as existing parking sites are eyed so greedily and snapped up by developers for other uses, and the physical problems of shopping for heavy goods, if using Park and Ride, it is little wonder that Beals has seen the light and left. City centre rents are at stratospheric levels, high business rates, and the constant competition from market traders whose costs are minimal in comparison make trading uncompetitive. It is small wonder that so many retail shops close. Estate agents, of course, are drawn here by ever-increasing Winchester house prices and thrive. Commission on £500,000 house sales is very attractive and profitable. And so many of us, and as so many of us, eat on the hoof these days, shops are providing for takeaway food. They also proliferate. We end up with fewer and fewer proper shops selling goods that we do want to buy. I grew up in Winchester before and during the war, and have seen the destruction of what was a shopping paradise. I cannot remember when I last went shopping in the city other than to collect a prescription, or perhaps for one specific thing. Usually the choice is so limited that I end up shopping online after all. Very likely we will soon begin to see bank branches closing, as fewer and fewer of us need to visit them. I only ever visit my bank if I receive a cheque, which I have to pay in, and this is an increasingly rare occurrence. Years ago, I used to visit my bank almost every day to pay in takings and to draw cash for wages. No longer. All my tenants pay online. We can all be grateful that our hard-earned money is no longer going to be wasted on that white elephant development, Silver Hill. What will our councillors dream up to replace it? Fortunately, at the age of 85, I'm unlikely ever to find out. That's from Keith Webb, Quarry Road, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
David Selby entitles his letter, Devolving Power. Sir, I suspect not a lot of people know much about the government's proposals for devolution in this area, coupled with their insistence on having an elected mayor for which I have heard no logical rationale. What do we know? What we do know is that Scotland has the most devolved powers of any UK region, with a population of about 6 million people. Wales and Northern Ireland have less powers, but nevertheless have populations of 1 million or more. Currently, the pathetic attempt in Hampshire seems to be no more than good housekeeping, rationalising some of the functions carried out by district authorities with the added bribe of access to the business rate. For proper devolution, we should look to Scotland for guidance. The region of Wessex incorporating Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire, Berkshire and Oxfordshire, for instance, would cater for a population of just over 4 million. It would sustain a reasonably sized parliament, would have funds to cover every aspect of government provision, including health and education, and would eliminate the cost of county councils. District and parish councils should be retained so that people would retain contact with local councillors, but their responsibilities should be restricted to overseeing very local functions. The present proposals, unless they have radically changed recently, seems to cut Hampshire in two, and is a very far cry from devolution as has been offered to Scotland and all. Let us be more ambitious and try to draw power away from central government, which since the war under both parties has taken to centralising more and more, the last being education. If we are now going to be devolved from Europe, why not have devolved regions with sufficient funds to respond to local needs? David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
Lame duck, says Ian Newberry. Sir, I am picking up on recent editorials concerning the role of Councillor Kim Gottlieb in matters relating to developments such as Silver Hill in Winchester. There is increasing disquiet amongst residents that his actions are seriously holding back the development of the city. And I started recently a discussion thread on the social media community Street Life. This has attracted a lot of participation by residents who share my concern about the apparent decline happening in Winchester, with many retailers voting with their feet and a council that appears unable to agree in how these matters can be addressed. It would appear to many of us that Councillor Gottlieb has not only alienated himself from his party and his leader, but has acted to scupper many schemes such as Silver Hill, which would have changed for the better an area increasingly becoming a run-down slum. Councillor Gottlieb has been forced into joining this discussion thread, but his input falls far short of what should be expected of him, and confidence in his ability is seriously in doubt. Perhaps you may like to put some of these points to him, as we appear to have a lame duck council led by the nose by one very destructive councillor, which can only damage the long-term prospects for the city. Ian Newberry, West Hill Park, Winchester.
The next letter is from Peter Rees, and it's marked Biased Speakers. Sir, the report of the Winchester Constituency Labour Party, that's WCLB, voting for Jeremy Corbyn is substantially inaccurate. Chronicle, August the 18th. Although the meeting was conducted with patience, calm and impeccable propriety, speakers were biased in the limited time allocated by the National Party for the strict conduct of such meetings. The majority were in favour of the current leader. Measured debate and contributions supporting the real Labour Party candidate Owen Smith were in the minority. These constituency meetings throughout the country are totally misrepresentative of actual numbers of the Labour Party members entitled to vote. The assumption that the leader will win is inaccurate. Less than 10% of the total membership of WCLP were able to vote in this incorrectly titled nomination meeting. It was an endorsement by a small group of members that is absolutely valueless. The leader cannot rely on all members of the WCLP to vote for him because no one actually knows how the other 900-plus members who were not there will vote in the one-member, one-vote secret ballot to be conducted over the next few weeks. The actual ratio was approximately 2-1, which means that nationally, Owen Smith is still a leading contender. It is essential that the current leader is defeated. Apart from the possibility that this country could have been without any form of nuclear defence, we are now faced with his anti-American pronouncements, the prospective withdrawal from NATO, the categorical denial of military support for any European country in the event of armed aggression, added to his support for the UK to leave the EU. If elected, he continues to create the possibility of making Britain vulnerable and military unprotected without our current allies, the Little England mentality. This messianic leader, who preaches to protest groups of disciples, abuses the real Labour Party and is totally unfit to govern. If led by him, it will be impossible to assume responsible power in Westminster or in government for the nation. Democratic socialism through the ballot box and strong leadership, not madcap isolationist policies. That's from Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
James Anderson entitles his letter, multiculturalism. Sir, in our village of South Wanston, we have not one but two multicultural, multi-faith centres. One is the village hall, and the other is a splendid new creation pavilion due to open this month. One cannot get any more multicultural than a community centre, and most can be booked by any denomination for faith meetings. Other countries have created a complete separation between the state and religion, France doing so over 100 years ago, and it would be unwise for Winchester City Council to begin muddling up these two matters. All those Methodist, Baptist, Plymouth Brethren and Jewish meeting places were and are funded by their congregations, as should be the case for any other faith. One becomes suspicious when the words multicultural, multi-faith are used, for they imply that these are something separate and different from community. A multicultural management committee is implied with visions of qualifying criteria to be followed by infighting as one faith attempts to dominate the facility. If local plans are not including enough community asset, then that would be a proper cause for concern. But a multicultural, multi-faith asset? What is one of those if it isn't plain, ordinary facility for all? James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Yet more delays, writes Paul 12-tree. Paul? I don't think that's right, actually. Paul 12-tree.
Quite right.
Sir, I think Councillor Gottlieb's letter, Chronicle, August the 25th, regarding his delayed chairmanship of the Central Winchester Regeneration Group last week, really says it all. 2 months to set the date of the first meeting, then the first few meetings to get organised and establishing process. Really? The Silver Hill affair has been going on for years, and Councillor Gottlieb has consistently professed to know exactly what the residents of Winchester really want in Silver Hill, as well as claiming to have a comprehensive grasp of the archaeology, water issues, parking and transport. Now he says he doesn't properly understand them and will need more meetings and delays before he can unveil his long-awaited vision for Winchester. As for informal discussions within his committee, out of the public eye, I understand that Councillor Gottlieb wanted his committee to meet in private and has also tried to stop me writing to the Chronicle, as well as instructing anyone who may criticise his efforts to stay away. So much for the openness and accountability that he has espoused in the past. He has also stated that his committee should have had only councillors from city wards on it. So why doesn't he excuse himself and let a councillor, a team player, constructive, with drive and vision, lead this important project? If someone had wanted to kick Silver Hill into the long grass, and I don't think that is the case at all, but if they did, then they couldn't have chosen a better person than Councillor Gottlieb to do it. I hope he proves me wrong and gets on with the job, as Winchester deserves better. Paul 12-tree, Burriton Road, Hairstock.
Adam Nicholas writes, cancel festivals. Sir, the obsequiousness of the response from the organisers of Boomtown regarding this year's festival made me reach for the sick bucket. If they had so much love for the community, they would cancel all future events. It is supposed to be a music festival, not a Burma railway. Sniffer dogs are having problems detecting new psychotic substances. No event can be safe. Most young people can do without Boomtown's love. The love of taking £6 million on the gate. The love of selling bottled water with a 1,000% markup. The event was aptly headlined by madness. Indeed, there were so many amazing things that happened at the festival, wild horses couldn't drag me away from last week's chronicle. The only reason Boomtown cancelled their next event was they didn't have enough bookings. A dance festival in December, are they sure? How surprising. Obviously not enough love. Not to mention the booking fees that no one will get back. That's written by Adam Nicholas, Paintersfield, St Cross, Winchester.
And following on from that, Claire Harvey's letter is entitled Event Not at Fault. Sir, I rarely write letters to newspapers, but felt compelled to respond following the negative letters in last week's Chronicle about the Boomtown event. Yes, the traffic was appalling on the Monday when everyone was trying to leave, but this was more to do with the A303 road closure all afternoon from a serious car accident than to Boomtown traffic. The traffic was not nearly as bad as in previous years, so I conclude it was the combination of events that made this year much worse. With regards to putting proper controls in place, the festival was probably one of the most well-organised I've been to, and the attention to detail was second to none, including the high use of sniffer dogs and searches to reduce drug use. Yes, the dry weather did mean the risk of fire was higher, and obviously any learning that can be taken from this year's festival should be taken seriously. But as far as I know, they take all the precautions they can in order to be granted a licence. As for the site being unsuitable for large numbers, General Eisenhower deemed it adequate for the assembly of the US invasion force in the run-up to D-Day. I would say the natural amphitheatre is the perfect place for a gathering in the spirit of celebrating human creativity that is not just motivated by profit. Each year, any profits are ploughed back into making the next festival even better. It's so easy to criticise the event, but it was a very enjoyable and special experience that has brought a lot of pleasure to a lot of people and does bring in revenue to the city. So I just hope we can be tolerant enough to put up with some inconveniences for such a short period of time. Claire Harvey, Hillside Road, Tegdown, Winchester.
David Bailey writes about easing city pressure. Sir, I was very pleased to read in your paper, Chronicle, August 25th, of the application for outline planning consent for three-storey offices at Chilcombe Park. Surely, to build high-quality offices in suitable locations on the edge of the city must be a far more sensible strategy than building large, overscaled office buildings within the city centre. If pressure is taken off the city centre in this way, then this will surely make for a far better context for the city to develop a strategy for lower key development and renewal within the city centre. In this way, the scale and historic character of the city can be better respected, and the City Council and the residents of Winchester can take advantage of the opportunity to think anew about what the overall character of the city centre should be, and what types of buildings and land uses would best meet their objectives to make the city centre a thriving, vibrant and diversified place to live, work and visit. David Bailey, Priors Barton, Winchester.
Next, we have items of historical interest from 200, 150 and 25 years ago.
Well, 200 years ago was September the 2nd, 1816, and it's headed Drowned in Porter. On Saturday, as James Keenan, a boy of about 14 years of age, was doing some plastering work for his employer in the brewery of Messrs Connolly, Summers and Co, Dublin. In crossing a plank which lay above one of the immense porter vats, he missed his step and was instantly precipitated into the foaming gulf below, where he was suffocated before any assistance could be given. The vat was emptied into the sewer, watched on by the coroner, Alderman Fleming, until every last drop was gone.
100 years ago, September the 2nd, 1916, Prussians defeated. The weekend saw some development of the position on the British front. On the anchor, General Haig's are steadily gaining ground, beating in the process the Prussian Guard, the flower of the German army. Near Thiepval, on Saturday, a fierce attack was launched on our trenches, but a splendid defence was maintained by the Wiltshire and Worcestershire men, and the Imperial Guard were beaten back.
50 years ago, September the 3rd, 1966, Beaulieu River. Hampshire County Planning Committee have received formal notification from the National Parks Commission that an area stretching from Calshot to Hurst Castle, and including most of the Beaulieu River, is proposed to be designated as an area of outstanding natural beauty. At their meeting in Winchester last Friday, the committee heard that as a result of this proposal, they would be able to obtain a grant to remove any eyesores in the area, have strict control over it, and be backed by the National Parks Commission.
25 years ago, August the 30th, 1991. Path Plan Call. Gerald Malone, the prospective Conservative parliamentary candidate for Winchester and Alton, has called for a dose of old-fashioned common sense over the Countryside Commission's proposal for an extension to the Hampshire Way through the village of Exton. Speaking at a party meeting in Winchester on Saturday, Mr. Malone said there was almost unanimous grassroots opposition to the favoured route, and it was difficult to resist drawing the conclusion the Commission was being pig-headed. He declared, "Local opinion is fearful that extending the route through Exton will overburden a small village with too many walkers and cause parking problems."
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will then be followed by letter from Westminster and then first person.
The editorial comment is entitled "Modern Winchester, a Tale of Two Cities." Can any news story better sum up the challenges facing Winchester than the front page story? Paul Wilde, a drug addict, secreted himself overnight in the cathedral before stealing £10 from the collection box and then, finding himself locked in and without a plan B, kicked his way through a precious stained glass window after damaging the mortuary chests containing the bones of Saxon kings. Wilde tumbled 25 feet and fractured both ankles before crawling away to get a taxi home. On one level, an element of black humour is clear, but on another, what an utterly pathetic and sobering tale about two sides of Winchester, the long-established church and the new underclass, which in the last 20 years has been destroyed by drug addiction. Winchester is becoming a city of such contrasts, high-class restaurants within yards of the increasingly slum-like bus station, expensive cars cruising past people at bus stops, homeowners and the young. Some people will shrug their shoulders, but anyone with the interests of Winchester should be worried. Just when some coordinated thinking would be welcome, another gulf is emerging in politics, with opponents quick to impugn the motives of people with whom they disagree. The Chronicle would be interested to hear answers any readers may have.
Letter from Westminster is, of course, by Winchester MP Steve Brine. Views of harvest during August remind us that agriculture is a key component of the local economy, employing a great many people. Last month I wrote in broad terms about Brexit, but highlighted three specific areas of interest I have as we negotiate a safe exit from the EU. In future columns I will say more about the city and the environment, But this time I want to focus on the future of British farming. In the aftermath of the vote, I reached out to farmers and the local NFU, chaired by Michael Gray, to ensure I understand their perspective and can represent it faithfully to ministers. I value the dialogue and will watch closely for the outcome of the NFU's largest members' consultation in a generation as they garner views on what is needed from a future domestic agricultural policy. Farming already makes a major contribution to the UK and is the bedrock for a vibrant supply chain that is essential for our food and drink industry, worth some £100 billion to the economy. I believe this industry can embody the opportunity of Brexit as we shape a new vision for an agricultural policy which ensures a dynamic, profitable and productive future. British farmers and growers already produce high-quality food to world-leading standards whilst caring for a thriving environment, so we've great strength to build upon. Reading some of the things written since June 23rd, you could be forgiven for thinking everything with an EU stamp on it is golden, but I haven't met many people who think the common agricultural policy, or indeed some aspects of how DEFRA operates, is an unchallenged success. Readers may wish to look for the State of Nature report this month, in which no less a figure than Sir David Attenborough talks about the crisis facing more than 120 species because of the industrialisation of agriculture driven by subsidies. It will say, Brexit means we have a chance to change this. So whilst I was pleased to see the new Chancellor guarantee the current level of agriculture funding under CAP will be upheld until 2020, that's only to be as part of the transition to new domestic arrangements. This gives crucial certainty to farmers and means any agri-environment schemes agreed before the 2015 autumn statement will be fully funded. But the government should now seize the chance to construct new farming policies which support those producing food and enhancing the natural environment, rather than the complex area-based payment system currently in force. And yes, ministers should listen to farmers who say they are in favour of gradually moving to subsidy-free world. It is medium-sized family farmers who are the backbone of the industry, but have struggled most under the CAP, whilst the major landowners have done best. Perhaps we should consider moving back to a headage system, providing a decent baseline income for a family farm. We should definitely move to a world where farmers work under a simplified, less regulated regime. Current estimates say £500 million a year of support money from the EU is being soaked up by bureaucrats turning Brussels directives into complicated regulations that are a nightmare for producers. Finally, immigration and farming. The current industry, certainly the fruit sector, would struggle without foreign labour. The post-Brexit settlement must allow these workers to come here whilst at the same time making farming jobs more attractive to British workers.
Well, first person this week is written by George Hayter and it's headed The Attraction of Clothes. Many of us put a lot of thought into our appearance, but I can think of no one who has made more of a fashion statement than a middle-aged man from Hampshire. Former Royal Marine Stephen Gough has made his name not by designing a new look or by championing a particular style of clothes. Instead, he has made his name by not wearing any clothes at all, apart from socks and shoes and a hat. Sometimes. Gough, 57, first made national headlines in 2003 when he walked from Cornwall to Scotland in the Buff. Striding in the nude is Gough's way of proclaiming that we all have a human right to go about our lives without covering. Scottish police were not persuaded when Hampshire's unclothed protester arrived north of the border. They locked him up. Since then, he has spent most of his time behind bars because nearly every time he has been released, he has insisted on taking his clothes off again. Gough's hometown is Eastleigh, but in recent years he has spent more time in Winchester. Well, it comes as no surprise that he was not merely spending time in Winchester, but actually doing time in Winchester prison. Gough's stubborn crusade has received support from a Spanish Human Rights Foundation and from a Times columnist who wrote that the nudity campaigner was ahead of his time. For the last two centuries in the Western world, there has been a hesitant trend towards public nudity, which has taken us from Victorian prudery to miniskirts and bikinis. Bare skin has been particularly widespread on cinema screens, with the public generally agreeing that nudity is a part of life that should be included in films. Pornography has gone even further, having long completed a journey from partial to total revelation. But TV, with its wider audience, has been more coy, generally keeping clothes on. That is, until this summer, when Channel 4 broadcast a new dating series of programmes called Naked Attraction, in which contestants were filmed completely bare. You can still watch it on catch-up. Lingering camera shots, often zoomed in on parts of the body, show each of the six men and six women that appear in each show. This is really Cilla Black's old blind date show, but with physical examination in places of scripted banter. Sounds awful, but it is embarrassing, and it is embarrassing to watch. People of cautious taste might like to put on dark glasses before viewing, or they could try watching it through the wrong end of a telescope. My eyes nearly popped out of my head when I saw my first episode, and who wouldn't be curious about such a novel display? This show is a significant milestone, a remarkable sign of the times. But the novelty was wearing off when I sat through my third episode. The person choosing the date discusses what he or she likes and dislikes about the bodies standing before them. What impressed me is the huge range of people's tastes. A contestant who struck me as obviously the most attractive was the first to be rejected by the chooser in the studio, and another contestant who appeared totally unappealing was chosen for the date. This wide range of taste could be a comfort because it suggests that someone somewhere will fancy you, whatever your shape. Naked Attraction is a bit like meat hanging in a butcher's shop window, but is nevertheless a public service. When I was a puzzled 1960s adolescent, nervous about the opposite sex, the down-to-earth approach of Naked Attraction would have boosted my confidence. Let's face it, clothes can be confusing. Put simply, when you're searching for a suitable mate, clothes inhibit an informed choice. Imagine if food was like that, with eating fare veiled behind fabrics when you're trying to choose what to eat.
There are no special announcements this week, but a few items of what's on that may interest you. On Saturday, the 10th of September, it's the Romsey Show at Broadlands from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. The entry price is £15 entry, but carers can go in free. And wheelchairs are available, so if you would like to go and you need a wheelchair, you can book the wheelchair on by telephoning 01202 670 450. That's 01202 670 450. That's the Romsey Show on Saturday the 10th of September. On Sunday the 11th of September at Wickham is A Taste of Wickham, a celebration in the square from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. On Tuesday the 13th of September in Winchester Cathedral at 1 p.m. there is a lunchtime concert, a piano recital by Roman Rudnitsky. This entry for this is free, but there will be a retiring collection. So piano recital in Winchester Cathedral at 1 o'clock on Tuesday the 13th of September. On Friday the 16th of September at the Theatre Royal on 7:30, Joe Swift will host an evening entitled A Man About the Garden. Tickets are £18 and can be booked by phoning the Theatre Royal box office on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. That's Joe Swift, A Man About the Garden, Theatre Royal, on the Friday the 16th of September. And on Saturday the 17th of September, in Winchester Guildhall, there is a craft and gift market from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's Saturday the 17th of September, Winchester Guildhall, craft and gift market. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 2nd of September, the sun rose at 20 past 6 in the morning and will set at 10 to 8 in the evening. Wednesday of next week, sunrise will be at 6:30 in the morning and sunset will be at 20 to 8 in the evening. If you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with your recording, with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Right, we now move on to items of general news interest.
And we open with, open days to peer into the past. That once a year chance to peek behind the often closed doors of Winchester is again being offered the next weekend. Some 40 Winchester buildings will be open to the public as part of the National Heritage Open Days, September the 8th to the 11th. It shows the wide variety of architectural heritage in the city. Many are regular participants, such as Abbey House, the Mayor's official residence in the Broadway, Searles House, military headquarters and museum in Southgate Street, and Winchester College. But there are also unusual buildings taking part, such as the 1930s Lido, the Eclipse Inn on the Square, Warren and Son on the High Street, and Carter Marsh and Company clock dealers in the Square. Open to the public will be Matterley Bowl and buildings in Cathedral Close. At Warren and Son, one of Winchester's oldest businesses, visitors can look inside the big safe, which has never been shown before. New this year is an evening of poetry at River Cottage Canteen in conjunction with Winchester Poetry Festival. Some events have limited capacity and may have to be booked in advance. Treasure Your Treasures is the theme this year and calls on communities to champion local heritage and show their support for local cultural and historic assets. Visitors are encouraged to capture themselves on camera with the objects, people, or places that they treasure and to share their stories online via social media using the hashtag Treasure Your Treasures. Specially made Heritage Open Day frames will be positioned in each region at some of the free events for people to put themselves in the picture, together with or in front of their treasures. The treasures theme comes following the result of a straw poll by Heritage Open Days, which showed that 95% of Heritage Open Days organisers had fears about the future of places like museums, galleries, archives, theatres, parks and historic sites in their own communities, which may be facing financial uncertainty. Some 225 local organisers responded to the survey about their treasures and their level of concern about the effects of funding cuts. They felt overwhelmingly that Heritage Open Days had an important role to play in supporting the future of their local treasures. Nikki Gottlieb, coordinator, said, All Heritage Open Days events are completely free of charge, which means it is a very inclusive festival that can be enjoyed by anyone and everyone. Opening doors can open minds too. Some visitors are amazed to discover places they never knew existed, whilst others just need to see that heritage isn't all about dusty tomes and gargoyles, but it can also be fun. The team behind Heritage Open Days is already hailing Winchester as a new festival hub, and I'm looking forward to putting together an even bigger, more diverse programme in 2017. We're incredibly lucky to have such a beautiful city brimming with many cultural and heritage assets, so we should be singing it from the rooftops. It's extraordinary how much heritage surrounds us. The light bulb, a cup of tea, the car, the newspaper. We should celebrate Winchester's history. Heritage Open Day's patron, Lloyd Grossman, is speaking in Winchester next Wednesday. He will be interviewed by Rose Burns, city councillor and criminal barrister, at the Guildhall at 7:30 p.m. Tickets, £10 plus 75p per ticket booking fee, unreserved seating.
Smiles all round at Fun Day. There was fun in the sun at Homestart Winchester's Family Fun Day when some 30 children and their parents enjoyed face painting, arts and crafts and messy play. A delicious lunch was laid on with lots of healthy eats, and there was an opportunity to learn how to make fruit salads and mini pizzas to take home and bake. Entertainment and magic tricks were an exciting finale to the day when magician Crazy M astounded her audience with sleight of hand and the production of a real white rabbit. Youngsters were invited to join in and try their hand at plate spinning, and the afternoon at Lanterns Nursery and Children's Centre on Berwick Road, Winchester, ended with a raucous rendition of the Hokey Cokey. Anne McPherson, Senior Coordinator for Homestart Winchester, said, "We are so grateful for all the wonderful volunteers who support our families throughout the year and who worked so hard to make this a day to remember." Homestart Winchester is a local charity which provides friendship and emotional and practical help to parents with at least one child under 5 years old. All its volunteers are themselves parents.
Awards for City's Best Independents. Thursday marked the end of a tense period for many businesses as the Winchester Business Improvement District bid finally revealed the winners of the poll to find the city's favourite independent businesses. Hopeful business owners gathered with members of the press in the Reinhardt Room in Hotel Duval in anticipation of the announcements. Voters were spurred on by the opportunity to win a hamper of prizes worth more than £800 donated by businesses including the Corner House, Vintage Hound and Rawberry. The lucky winner of the hamper was Dr. Martin Brown. Jeremy France Jewellers collected their award for Best Retail Business ahead of Parklife Kids and Kingsgate Wines and Provisions. Shokoko Winchester collected the award for the Best Hospitality Business with the Chesil Rectory and Café Monde runners-up. The Independent Holiday Shop were the winners in the service sector category, in which Jack Rabbit's Barbers and Mawson & Company were also shortlisted.
Hello, world. You named me Macari. And this is about, obviously, the tiger cub. That's the name chosen after a competition to name Marwell Zoo's adorable male Amur tiger cub. Macari, a Russian name from Greek origin meaning blessed or blessed, was a clear favourite with 52% of the public votes. At just 13 weeks old, he is starting to explore his new home with sisters Bela and Zimmer under the watchful eye of Mum. Born to first-time parents, Miller and Bagai, the triplets are the first Amur tiger cubs born at Marwell for 12 years. Macari and his sisters will be a valuable asset to the European Endangered Species Breeding Programme, which conserves the species and avoids extinction. The cubs have been behind the scenes with their mum since their birth on June the 25th. They have been vaccinated, and it'll soon be time for them to venture into the outside paddock and meet the public. Mark Fox, team leader for carnivores at Morwell, said, "Miller is looking after her cubs very well. She's attentive, protective, and very patient with her excitable youngsters. It's great to watch the cubs finding their feet, running around and exploring their new surroundings. Thank you to everyone who voted for the winning name. We think Macari is a great choice." In the 1940s, the Amur tiger was close to extinction, with an estimated population of fewer than 30 individuals in the wild. Decades of turmoil in Russia and formation of the former Soviet Union reportedly contributed to failures to stem uncontrolled persecution. In 1947, the Soviet Union became the first country to introduce legislation that imposed protection, including banning hunting of tigers. Hunting of the tiger's main prey species, boar and deer, were also limited at this time. Today, the Amur tiger has full priority species protection in both countries in which it occurs, Russia and China. The population is now estimated to be 360 individuals. However, poaching is still a threat to the species.
Cash boost to job seeker program. Job seekers in Winchester have been given a boost. The charity of Henry Smith, St John the Baptist branch, has made a contribution towards Winchester City Council's employment mentoring programme. The council is working with national charity SOVAR to train locally recruited mentors to support unemployed people. So far, 21 volunteer mentors have been recruited in four phases of recruitment, and they have given over 420 hours of support to 41 people. 90% of those on the programme have seen improvements to their job search skills. Rector of East Winchester, Paul Kennedy, presented a cheque for £5,000 to Winchester City Council and SOVAR in front of the combined congregations of All Saints and St John the Baptist churches. City Council portfolio holder for estates and local economy, Councillor Steve Miller, said, "We are delighted to accept this financial contribution from the charity of Henry Smith, St John the Baptist branch, which shows that our popular employment mentoring programme is highly regarded locally." John Harding, chairman of the Employment Mentoring Steering Group and congregation member of St John the Baptist Church, said, "I am proud of the success of the programme. We will use the financial support for additional IT training for job seekers." If you would like to help with finding work and you live within the Winchester district or are interested in volunteering on the programme, contact Alex Solomon on 07980 732 005. That's 07980 732 005.
Man treks 589 miles for ill girl. A retired man has completed a grueling 589-mile walking and cycling challenge. Former motor trader Barry Baker, 67, from Colton Common, did it to raise funds for 8-year-old Keely Cullen from Marchwood, who needs £50,000 for a life-changing operation. She was born 8 months premature. Sorry, 8 weeks premature. Beg your pardon. And was... yes. It couldn't be possible. She was born 8 weeks premature and was diagnosed with spastic diplegia cerebral palsy at 2 years old, which gives her painful muscle tightness in her legs. And she's been recommended for an operation called selective dorsal rhizotomy, which will help her walk. Mr. Baker said, I found out about Keady's plight through my son Daniel. His band, the Morphic Fields, had agreed to do a reunion to raise funds. He told me all about the Keady's Wishes appeal, which was attempting to raise money for the operation. The procedure that she required is not available through the NHS, which means that many children who have spastic diplegic cerebral palsy, like Keely, continue to struggle with their mobility. I have three grown-up sons and four grandchildren, and I know how important their health is to me, so I felt that I had to help in some way. He's a regular walker and cyclist after he changed his lifestyle following a health scare a number of years ago. It was his newfound fitness, he says, that inspired him. Since undergoing major surgery, I've become much more active, and it occurred to me that I could put my cycling and walking to good use, supporting Keely.
And I have an article here from Belgarum with its alternative look at the news, entitled Countryside Homicide? Hampshire barrister Nigel Pascoe, QC, has worked on more than 100 murder cases in a career stretching back to the 1960s. Prosecuting and defending, he has seen the dark side of man's cruelty to fellow man. So Mr. Pascoe will be keeping a close eye on a trial starting this Sunday, a case that has gripped a large section of the population. It is the trial of Helen Titchener, accused of the attempted murder and wounding with intent of her husband Rob, on the BBC Radio 4 radio drama The Archers. Mr. Pascoe, QC, based in Southampton, who regularly appears at Winchester Crown Court, said that he would be, quote, very happy, unquote, to represent Helen, saying she has a strong case for self-defence amid the domestic violence that the show has highlighted. Interviewed on Radio 4 Today programme, Mr. Pascoe, an Archers fan, said, she has a good case, but she has problems. There are two stab wounds, and the prosecution will say that shows intent, if not to kill, then to cause really serious harm. He is just as interested in the drama side of things too. He is an actor and playwright of some renown. But he voiced concerns that the programme makers may go too far with dramatic licence and added, it would be terrible if drama trumped reality. And there is a photograph of Helen Archer, who is played by Louisa Patikas, and Rob Titchener, played by Timothy Weston, looking concerned, and I think Helen looks a little bit cowed by the fact that Rob has got his arms around her shoulder and is holding on to her very tightly.
A double celebration for one of city's most popular shops. One of Winchester's best-loved shops is celebrating twice over this week. Kingsgate Wines and Provisions in Kingsgate Village is marking 20 years since the doors were first opened. The shop was also a finalist in the July 2016 poll to find Winchester's favourite independent retail business, a campaign launched by Winchester BID in association with the Winchester magazine. The owner, Anne Havill Jameson, is taking stock as the shop enters its next double decade. She said, we see 75,000 people a year coming into the shop, which for a quiet corner of Winchester is quite amazing. Many customers have become friends whose loyalty is fundamental to our future. Ms. Havill Jameson, a former landlady of the Wickham Arms, just across the street, added, it is the happy combination of this support from our customers and the warmth and engagement of our staff that is central to our success. Tim Pride manages the shop brilliantly and sets the standard in every aspect of its being. KPO, as it is affectionately known, opens 7 days a week and provides such a variety of merchandise that it is regularly described as a real treasure trove of groceries and fine wines, providing something for everyday needs as well as treats for special occasions. Plans for the future? Well, she added, continue to appreciate our staff and our customers, and to win top prize in the BID competition next year.
Military Wives Choir are home for Christmas. The Military Wives Choirs will be heading to Winchester this November as part of their seven-date Home for Christmas tour. The Military Wives Choirs of Winchester, Middle Wallop and Matchford will take to the stage at Winchester Cathedral on Monday, November the 21st. Other Military Wives Choirs will perform at six other cathedrals across the UK, and tickets go on sale on Friday. The choirs, which boast two UK number one singles as part of their repertoire, will perform a selection of tracks from their soon-to-be-released new album, Home for Christmas, as well as from their two UK top 10 albums, In My Dreams and Stronger Together. The choir first shot to fame when they took part in the fourth series of Gareth Malone's The Choir. They captured the nation's heart instantly and went on to secure their first UK number one single, Wherever You Are, Wherever You Are. In 2012, they also performed at the opening of the Olympic Stadium, London, contributing to the Gary Barlow and Andrew Lloyd Webber's track Sing, created to mark the Diamond Jubilee of Elizabeth II. Tickets for Home for Christmas tour are priced at £25 and will be available from Friday of next week.
Deliveroo launch to create 50 jobs. A rapidly expanding food delivery service says it is to create dozens of jobs with its latest launch in Winchester. Deliveroo, spelled D-E-L-I-V-E-R-O-O, the on-demand delivery service for high-quality restaurant meals, will create 50 jobs in the city, say the company, with the majority of these being Deliveroo riders that aim to deliver your food, which will be cooked fresh to order, to your door within 32 minutes. More than 20 restaurants have signed up, including Forte Kitchen, Palm Pan Asian, Pizza Express and Zizzy. Jeremy Rawlinson, general manager at Deliveroo, said, "We're looking forward to bringing some delicious dishes straight from the hands of local chefs to customers." And this article is accompanied by a picture of a young man on his bicycle carrying a Deliveroo rucksack on his back, so presumably well insulated to deliver a hot meal to your house.
Help to read in Bible Marathon. The hunt is on to find people to take part in a Bible marathon. Acting Dean at Winchester Cathedral, Canon Rowley Ream, is looking for people to read the Holy Book from cover to cover in a round-the-clock four-day readathon. He believes it takes 75 hours to recite the 66 books, 39 in the Old Testament and 27 in the New Testament. Dr. Ream said, "The readings will be from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the cathedral, then overnight from 3 p.m. to 10 a.m. in the cathedral's Wessex Learning Centre in Cathedral Close. Readers in the small hours are particularly welcome. The reading is from September the 7th to the 10th, and organisers ask for a time slot of no less than 10 minutes for adults and 5 for children. Participants are invited to contribute a minimum of £30 for adults or £10 for children through sponsorship or donation." And there is a photograph here of six of the cathedral staff practising for the readathon, obviously with open Bibles in front of them. If anybody is interested in any more detail, they can contact the Dean's PA. And if you have access to the internet, you can send an email to Dean's PA, which is as it sounds, D-E-A-N-S-P-A at winchestercathedral.org.uk. That's Dean's PA at winchestercathedral.org.uk.
Bloomin' lovely show of horticulture. The weather may have been fickle for much of this summer, but members of the Winchester Horticultural Society succeeded in putting on a colourful autumn show at Badger Farm Community Centre. 33 keen competitors showed their best fruit and vegetables, as well as a colourful array of flowers and pot plants, with 211 entries spread over 90 categories. These included floral art, with some wonderfully imaginative exhibits representing themes such as a tea party at the palace and the challenging Make a Crown for Her Majesty. The less green-fingered entrants submitted impressive photographs or made cakes or jams. Cups and trophies were presented by Winchester Deputy Mayor Councillor David McLean, accompanied by his wife Diane, who was presented with a flower arrangement made by long-standing member Joan Allen. A pleasing number of visitors also enjoyed the show. The Society meets on the second Wednesday of the month at the Winchester Club. New members and visitors are very welcome.
The Grays Festival in Twyford. Thousands were present at this musical feast. 80s icons helped bring a Twyford music festival to life. Grays Festival drew more than 2,000 people to enjoy acts like The Beat and Toya. Rock and roll singer John Otway was also a performer. People danced to music by Flight Brigade, Polly and the B.A. Do, The Lucky Strikes, Robert Vincent, Ruse, spelled R-E-W-S, Lilo's Wall, Southampton Ukulele Jam, DJ Supercat and Luna Rivers. This year there was a children's area and families enjoyed Hampshire Fair Kitchen's food. A spokesman said the festival was on course to beat last year's total of £12,000.
Businesswoman gets Rising Star Award nod. A Winchester businesswoman is one to watch, according to the judges of prestigious awards. Catherine Turness, Executive Director of Winchester BID, that's Business Improvement District, has been shortlisted in the Rising Star category at the Thames Valley and South Coast Women in Business Awards. She has worked for Business BID for more than 5 years, progressing from project manager to BID manager, and then to her present position in August of 2015. Catherine has taken the BID from strength to strength, organising new events and projects to help benefit the city and economy, helping Winchester to be crowned the Sunday Times Best Place to Live 2016 along the way. At last year's awards, Catherine was a runner-up and described as a role model. As well as Winchester BID, Catherine finds time to manage her co-founded not-for-profit business, The Mad Hatters Present, which stages events to raise money for charities. Her last event raised more than £9,500 for the British Heart Foundation. It's important that I can pull skills I've gathered from my time at the BID and repurpose them to help local causes, said Catherine. The satisfaction when we present a cheque to the charity is priceless. She also sits on the advisory board as a non-executive director at Mediation Service Court and Tribunal Solutions. Next on the list for Catherine is steering Winchester BID through their renewal ballot in 2017.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.